The Evolving School Lunch. If your memory of school lunch invokes chicken nuggets and Jell-O, think again. School lunches are changing, and in many schools, kids are more likely to find carrots and hummus on the menu. New guidelines under the Obama administration fueled some of the changes in school lunch programs, but many schools had already been rethinking their menus. Now, the USDA has issued new guidelines, loosening the rules on flavored milk, whole grains, and salt that will go into effect next month. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we will discuss the impact of school lunch guidelines on Maine schools. Some say they lead to too much waste. Others say they've been a catalyst for innovative ideas and healthy habits. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio Studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Do you have fond memories of the lunches from your school cafeteria? No? Well, these days, more effort goes into making school lunches nutritious and tasty. Today, we will learn about what Maine school districts are doing to meet students' nutritional needs. Joining me in the studio, Jeannie Riley, who is Director of Nutrition for RSU 14 in Windham. Walter Beasley is Child Nutrition Director for the Maine Department of Education. And Ashley Edmondson is Program Coordinator for Let's Go, an initiative focused on obesity prevention that is part of Maine Health. We always want to hear from you. How are the meals at your kids' school? Have you been following the controversy over federal nutrition requirements? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Walter, we're going to start with you. Tell me, how many schools in Maine serve lunch? How many kids are eating school lunch? What are the numbers? What do we know?
Well, what we know is about 160,000 meals served a day across the state of Maine. So we are the biggest restaurant, the biggest classroom in the entire state. And that's about 215 districts and almost 700 schools across Maine that have lunch every day for the students.
And many have breakfast as well, correct?
Right. And of the schools, about a dozen do not offer breakfast to the students right now.
Do you have a sense statewide of how many kids eat their school lunch versus how many kids pack a lunch?
We have about a little over 50% of the kids that actually take the offering for lunch, and about 28% that take the breakfast program currently.
Okay. So, Jeannie, tell me about your school district. What percentage of kids buy school lunch?
At the high school, it's definitely about that. About 50% are getting a school lunch. At lower grades, it's higher than that, but also kind of honing in around between 50 and 60% that are getting a school lunch every day.
Okay. How has, and a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit more about Windham and Patty White. People who listen very closely to Maine Public Radio might remember her terrific story from a Windham school district. When did the Windham school district start kind of changing the way it did school lunch? And tell me how it came about.
Well, I've been in the Windham district and then finally the Windham and Raymond district once we consolidated since the 2009 school year. And around that time, we were already changing, switching over to whole grains and more fruits and vegetables. It was prior to the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, although that was really coming down the pipeline. We had some grant money with the
We had some grant money.
We had grant money, which helped us to really focus in on the nutritional quality of our school meals. And with that grant money, we started putting some ideas to work and switching over and really spending some time at looking at what we did and asking students and asking families what they wanted.
Okay, so it wasn't a lot of news has come out about what happened under the Obama administration, those guidelines, and how the Trump administration is changing them. But your process started long before that.
It did start a long time before that. And through some of the grant funds, one thing that we really did that was really instrumental, we had a visioning meeting with stakeholders throughout our district. And through that meeting, we decided to really investigate having a chef on staff. What would it look like? Not necessarily a chef at every school, but what did it look like if we had a chef as a in an administrative role in our school nutrition program? And through that meeting, that seed was planted. Several years later, we were replacing some key staff, and we decided to go ahead and go for it and hire a chef in our district. And I think that that really sped up the change and really also changed the way people started to think about school meals in our district.
Okay. Well, Ashley, I want to bring you into the conversation. Tell us how Let's Go works with schools. I know about how Let's Go is promoting things like exercise and less screen time. How does Let's Go work with schools around Maine?
Sure. Yes. We've been in a variety of ways working with schools and child cares, but school nutrition has a long history with Dr. Tori Rogers, who is our senior director. And just, you know, trying to understand first school nutrition and, you know, trying to learn their world and kind of, you know, how it is. They're serving, you know, healthy meals, but there's a lot of layers to it that people don't from the outside understand always. And just working together and over the last, you know, decade, really kind of focusing on what we call as behavioral economic strategies, or sometimes people know as smarter lunchroom strategies. So really working with, you know, helping school nutrition programs, which many of them are doing it anyways and already, but, you know, putting white milk in front of the chocolate milk and so on and so forth. But we work with about 80 school districts across the state, representing about 358 school cafeterias who all complete, you know, and go through the Smarter Lunchroom process with us. So, yeah, we've been, you know, they've been a critical partner to you know, obesity prevention. They're serving healthy meals to our students. And from a Let's Go standpoint, we know that, you know, healthy meals and putting good food into our body, you know, is linked to academic success. And so really just trying to figure out how to, you know, support them, but also help bridge the gap between, you know, school nutrition and you know, the communities.
All right. You talk about behavioral economics. I'm guessing what we call the dishes is part of that. Naming them something that kids will like. You're nodding, Jeannie. What give me an example of a dish that kids really like that has a great name.
Oh, my goodness. So today at lunch at our elementary schools, we do a yummy yogurt cruncher lunch. It's yogurt and fruit, basically, and some crackers, some graham crackers. Kids can dunk their fruit and their crackers in the yogurt, but just the name, yummy yogurt cruncher lunch, makes all the difference.
Walter, I alluded to some of the changes in the nutritional guidelines that came out first under the Obama administration and now are being altered a bit under the Trump administration. What changed a few years ago and what will change next month?
Well, the change is the federal government's allowed flexibility to the meal plan now. And a lot of schools have already put the program in place with the current standards. So when the flexibility rule comes out in July, I don't really see a big difference.
But let's go back. What happened a few years ago to change school lunch? I know that it was Michelle Obama's initiative, but it did get through the USDA. What was different then?
The Hunger Free Kids Act came out and put restrictions on sodium. They put restrictions on the whole grain. They put restrictions on the milk. A number of restrictions that came out that were pretty restrictive. It was pretty restrictive on some of the things they can sell in a la carte. So it really changed the program quite a bit and what they'd look at. But it not only changed the program, it also changed what distributors are offering to the schools. So they had to gear up and change their chicken patties to have whole grain breading. The milk industry had to adopt the milk to fit this new needs for the milk program, which they've all done a very good job at. And what's happening a lot of times in the school lunch program, we drive a change, it becomes a commercial market item, and then the parents, guardians can get it in the grocery stores at the same time. So the change that we do with the students today will affect them lifelong at home and everything else.
And then the new guidelines that you said are already being implemented in some places loosen those restrictions. Now, instead of everything being whole grain, half of the offerings have to be whole grain, correct?
That's what the federal flexibility allows. It allows them to do half the grains across the country. There are states out there that are not going back to that. They're giving the different schools the option to go back or to stay with it 100%. The problem with the whole grains is that it's certain items. What currently happens today is if they have pasta is the biggest one we have, that the schools can't get an acceptable product. It won't cook acceptable. Students don't like it. So they can ask the state of Maine for a waiver for pasta, and which we've been doing now since 2016. And since 2016, there's probably 40 districts that requested that waiver. And school year 18 and school year 19, we have 28 that request the waiver. So the market's changed. The quality of the food has changed because we want food that is good quality, something students can enjoy, because our goal is to serve nutritious meals. Now, Wyndham's a good leader and done some really great things out there. They put a chef on board, et cetera, et cetera. And also in our office, we've also hired a chef, and we'll have a kitchen soon. We're going to start teaching some basic cooking skills, hand skills, and try to improve the quality meals and work with people in the field.
So the state is going to do, on a larger scale, what Wyndham's been doing, have a chef develop meals and maybe bring food service people in from different departments to learn from them?
That's right. We'll have a kitchen where we can bring 20 people at a time, and we'll actually do hands-on a meal preparation to show them that it can be done.
Because, Jeannie, I'm guessing it's one thing to talk about cooking healthy, but when you're talking about making a lot of food, and you're making a lot of food in big batches, some kids eat at 11 o'clock, some kids eat at 11:45, others might be eating at 1, that this is a challenge. It's not the same as cooking healthy for your family.
It's so true. It's really, we do a lot of batch cooking. So what is served at 10:30 in the morning may not be, then we may batch cook another batch to be served at 12 o'clock noon. Our team has been trained by our chef to do these things in batch order so that the freshest food is available possible. I can guarantee you that no student wants to eat broccoli at 12:30 if it was cooked at 9 o'clock in the morning. Nobody wants to eat broccoli that's been cooked 3 hours beforehand.
But that's tricky for staffing, because if somebody's in the kitchen cooking, who's serving? You've got, this is exponential, I'm thinking.
It's just a very coordinated effort. And I'm going to give right now a big shout out to my team, who just has done an amazing, phenomenal job of coming along with us on this healthy food journey, we like to call it. We're changing every day. We're always reevaluating.
So I'm talking about Patty White's story that she did in December in Wyndham. And I want to hear from some of the voices from the interviews Patty did in the Wyndham School District.
If we're exposing them to fresh fruits, vegetables, giving them samples of quinoa so they can see what it is, they can smell it, they can taste it, they can experience it, then we are changing the way these kids eat for the rest of their lives.
You can put as much as you want on the plate and it still costs the same, which is amazing. They really encourage you to grab a lot of things, and you can grab like such a good meal for really, really cheap. And I haven't gotten home lunch since I went to the high school, actually.
If you go to a school that just has like junk food and stuff, it's not a good school. Like, you know that they don't really care about you. This school like really makes you feel like, okay, like they care about what you eat and they make sure that you're going to stay healthy.
Okay, great compliments from students. I'm sure you like to hear that, Jeannie. I'm wondering, do you have any data to show the change in kids, weight or attitudes in school? Is there any way to measure the impact of this new program?
The easiest thing for us to measure is participation. And we've seen a very steady increase in our meal participation, particularly at our high school, where when I started in the Wyndham and Raymond School Department, we were probably serving about 80 school lunches a day. And now we're serving about 450, sometimes even 500 per day. So just the growth in participation is really our benchmark for whether our programs are successful or not.
You have to think of these schools, they're not school cafeterias anymore. These are school restaurants. You have chefs in these schools, you're preparing quality meals. It's not the old school cafeteria. These are school restaurants.
Isn't an issue though, Ashley, and I've talked to my own kids about this, waste.
Actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's sort of more of a myth, the waste thing. I think at some point, yes, I think with young people, and I have children of my own, sometimes trying something new is different and weird, and they're not interested. But over time, and keep continued exposure, kids are likely to turn the corner. And I think it's just been taking time. So I think, yes, probably at first there was waste and there was a lot of talk about waste. But I know a lot of schools have done different strategies where they have, you know, extra fruit sharing, you know, a sharing table where kids can grab a piece of fruit that another kid didn't want. But I think it has gone down. I mean, I was just reading an article recently where it was talking about it has significantly gone down. And I think that's part of this discussion around just some of the myths that are out there that Let's Go has been trying to dispel and work with our partners on, you know, what school meals are, you know, that they are their own business, that they aren't part of the school budget, you know, that they do what comes in, that revenue has to, you know, pay for their school nutrition staff and their equipment and the food and layers and layers. So just dispelling those myths, I think, has been part of it.
Well, that's great to know, because I'm thinking back to my own experience when I got to eat lunch with my kids when they were in first and second grade, and there was a lot of waste, but that was 10 years ago. And what you're telling me is that in the last decade, I would not have seen kids dumping their tray into the trash can as I witnessed when they were younger.
One of the things that we think is really important when it comes to the waste issue is the amount of time that students have. We're now students are required to take a serving of fruit or vegetable, and we are all about that. Two things related to that, though, is sometimes if you're giving a child raw fruits and vegetables, they take longer to chew. So if they have 20 minutes from the time they hit the cafeteria to the time they have to dump their tray, is that enough time for the student to get in line, get their food, sit down, socialize with their friends, because that makes the lunchtime just much more enjoyable, and eat what they are planning to eat, what they have taken? The other thing we really like to do is educate students to take what they want, but eat what they take. If we have an open salad bar where students can help themselves to fruits and vegetables all they want, that's great. But don't take things if you don't plan on eating them. And that's an educational piece. And we meet with students at the beginning of each year to kind of convey that message to them.
Walter, you wanted to jump into.
Well, I was just going to say, the waste, we found a lot of waste was not enough time to eat. You know, the average is around 20 minutes for every school in the state of Maine. You think about when you come down to the cafeteria, you're in line 7 minutes, and then you got to get your meal. Then if it's an orange, you got to peel it. Sometimes just letting the kid take the orange with them instead of making them throw it away sometimes is a big thing too.
Yeah, and I think some of the strategies sort of to counteract some of the initial waste things have been these prepackaged grab-and-go lunches or breakfasts or pre-cut sliced fruit to avoid, you know, having to sit and peel. A lot of our school nutrition programs are, you know, doing reimbursable meals, you know, all bundled up, you know, so the kids, you know, because sometimes even during that 20-minute lunch period, a child has to or a student has to go to something else. So they may have to come in, grab their lunch, and go to their, you know, advisory meeting or, I don't know, or mm-hmm. something else that's pulling them away. So I think those other strategies are a lot of our nutrition programs are using across the state.
We have to take a quick break. When we come back, more conversation about school lunch, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Journalism is more than news. Journalism is about human lives. And public broadcasting, particularly Maine Public, does such a splendid job of giving us a light into the lives of our fellow citizens.
And it's both local things that are happening in the state, it's historical, it's global, and it's always very high quality and very well balanced.
From my experience and where I look for news, I've considered Maine Public to be the most reliable source of news that I can easily access.
We as citizens in this state are directly participating in supporting and funding this fabulous resource we have. So we feel a sense of ownership and pride.
I'm making sure that my support of Maine Public helps it to keep going. Without that support, and I know I'm a small piece of the puzzle, but without all of the puzzles, it simply won't be something that we can access anymore.
Support independent and trusted journalism by making a gift today online at mainepublic.org.
And a special thanks to Elizabeth from Portland for their donation of a 2007 Toyota Yaris. Donations to the Maine Public Car Donation Program make a big difference for your public radio station and in most cases result in a tax deduction for you. Towing is free, and the great feeling you get from supporting the programming that you enjoy and count on is priceless. If you're thinking of what to do with your car, consider Maine Public. It's easy. Just visit mainepublic.org, click on support, and then the Maine Public Vehicle Donation Program. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, School Lunches and Nutrition. Joining me in the studio, Walter Beasley, Child Nutrition Director for the Maine Department of Education. Ashley Edmondson is Program Coordinator for Let's Go. And Jeannie Riley is Director of Nutrition for RSU 14 in Windham. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now, Anna Corson. She is Program Director for Full Plates, Full Potential. Anna, thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for having me on the show today.
So tell us about Full Plates, Full Potential. What do you do?
So we are a statewide nonprofit. We work to end child hunger through school meals. So we really see that school meals are such a crucial part of the school day for all students, but especially for nearly half of Maine students who qualify for free and reduced meals at school, and that school meals are really the best way to reach them with the nutrition that they need.
How important are school meals to these children in terms of simply having enough food to eat as well as meeting their nutritional needs?
They're really crucial, especially for these children's outcomes in life. We know that a hungry child can't learn. So kids that are coming to school hungry, they won't be able to fulfill their academic potential, and that just has long-term implications for those those students, and also just for our state, our state's economy. And the data shows that children that participate in school meals have higher test scores. They are, they visit the school nurse less often. They are, going to be tardy or absent less frequently. So, these programs are really, really important for hungry children in our state.
Yeah, so I understand that one of the issues in school lunch programs has been that many kids who qualify for reduced lunch don't actually get it for a number of reasons. I've read that sometimes the parents don't do the proper paperwork, or the kid feels a stigma about being that kid who gets the free and reduced lunch. Are there solutions to these issues? Are there ways to make sure everybody who deserves it gets a school lunch?
Absolutely. So the more that schools can reduce the stigma of school lunch and school breakfast, the more likely it is that all students will participate. So a lot of schools across Maine are using best practices like serving school breakfast after the first bell. So that makes breakfast a part of the school day and more children participate, and that reduces the stigma, which means that the students that really, really need those meals are going to be able to access them and will feel more comfortable accessing those meals because they're eating with their peers.
All right. Well, Anna, thanks so much for calling in. Anna Corson, Program Director for Full Plates, Full Potential. We're going to go to Heather, who's calling from Lisbon. Hi, Heather. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I mean, you touched on it briefly with the time. I mean, they have improved the lunches greatly, but there is no time to eat it. I mean, my daughter goes to school all the time, and I say, why don't you eat hot lunch? There's so many choices. And she said, I'm not going to have time to eat it.
Well, you guys were talking about you need more than 20 minutes. How many schools actually give the kids more than 20 minutes, Walter?
There's not a lot to give more than 20 minutes. It's really important that if you want to give them 20 minutes to eat, you don't include the time they're in line, the time to go down to the cafeteria. There's actually a bill being proposed currently that would allow a 30-minute lunch period. But it comes down to planning the school schedule and working with the administration and the teachers to give them a decent time to eat.
And you say there's some other parts of the environment that are important, too. They need enough time, but they also need...
Well, think about if you came home for dinner or went to a restaurant, you would take your coat off, your hat, your mittens, et cetera, et cetera. But some of these schools, the students have to go through a salad bar line with their mittens and their hat. The environment's cold. The lights are dim. It's supposed to be a friendly, comfortable atmosphere to eat. If you went to a restaurant and it was an ugly atmosphere, you wouldn't go back. So students want to be comfortable as well. They want to socialize. and have a nice eating environment.
So you are advising schools that, for example, have recess either before or after lunch to make sure the kids are not going into the cafeteria wearing their clothes to go outdoors.
Right, absolutely. I mean, besides the fact that they're not comfortable eating, then you also have issues with their food mittens being dragged through their lunch. And who wants to have, you know, that to their own meal? So it's important that they're comfortable and have a nice eating environment. It is a school restaurant.
Thanks, Heather, for your call. We have an email from Barbara. I can't say enough positive things about our school lunch at Brooksville Elementary School. Suzanne is an amazing cook and incorporates so many different items into the menu. She also works with local farmers to get in-season produce whenever possible. We have a school garden. She uses that produce that the kids grow in the school lunch as well. It's totally different than when I went there 20 years ago. There's even an offer of salad most every day. She has totally revitalized the lunch program there. Jeannie, how important is it to have somebody who's just a visionary in your school department?
It really helps. I think, you know, a lot of people have asked, what are the keys to the change that has happened in Wyndham? And I kind of boiled it down to like five or six words that start with the letter C. And the first thing is culture. You know, if your culture in your district is not going to be promoting healthy school meals, that's the first stumbling block you're going to come away from. Then there's collaboration and creativity and communicating. We spend a lot of time marketing our school meals so that people know that we've changed. And then just consistency and customer service, customization, all of those things are all part of the package that leads to success.
And marketing is very important, as Jeannie said. Serving the food in the right color and just being hot, it's promoting your program. Letting the kids know, letting the parents know what's going on is very important. Local products is very important. We have a program in Maine that's called Harvest Project of the Month, which we're going to showcase one product, Maine product every month, and that'll be starting the end of this year.
It's really important if you're changing and doing these things. You're using local produce, you have a farm-to-school program or a school garden that you're telling families that you're doing it. Otherwise, they're going to rely on their own school meal experience. Even Jennifer, you referenced back to when 10 years ago when you had school lunch with your children. It was totally different than it is now. But if your frame of reference hasn't changed, no one's showed you anything different, you're going to fall back on that experience.
And we often say a lot of our Let's Go staff across the state that are working with schools and school nutrition programs, you know, go in and have lunch and experience it, you know, yourself to find out, you know, there are really warm, delicious, fresh fruits and vegetables available and to help, you know, because sometimes we'll hear a lot of, you know, there can be complaints, you know, because it's, again, goes back to the myth thing about their previous image of what school meals was for them and how it is very different. And then to note on the marketing piece, we often hear because they're bogged down doing a lot of it. When I say they, I mean school nutrition professionals doing a lot of preparing and cooking the food and or the administrative pieces, the paperwork of the free and reduced lunch. They don't have time. Not as many. Some do. Some have been better at others, but marketing what they are doing. So to tell somebody that, no, our potatoes this week are from the farm down the street, that, you know, so part of our effort on the Let's Go side has been, you know, working with the school staff who might be involved on the wellness, you know, they might have a wellness committee to say, did you know that? Like, let parents know that, because your school nutrition staff, you know, it's not something that they have time for right now. That's when Jeannie talks about collaboration. You know, that's where we're trying to have them collaborate so they can kind of have each other's backs.
We'll go to John, who's calling from Hollowell. Hi, John. Go ahead. John?
Hi, one quick thing was the stigma. I remember years ago when I was in the Augusta School District, definitely at least in middle and high school, which I can remember, we had no idea who was on free lunch or not. I don't know if that was something that the administration did or if it was our parents or whatnot, but it was just not. There was no stigma because we literally just had no clue. That was just a side note. The second note, is that I work in kitchens about for a school district south of Yarmouth, north of Augusta, a couple times a month. And a couple years back, I went into one of the kitchens, and the cooks looked a little down and asked what happened, or, you know, what's up. And they said that they were no longer allowed to cook their own food, which they had been doing with, you know, raw ingredients, making their own dishes and whatnot. And at that point forward, everything was straight out of a bag, literally looked like straight out of a prison cook bag.
So, John, did this school district, when you say it was straight out of a bag, did they, had they centralized their food service? I know some departments are doing that.
Maybe. I don't know. They just said the lunch people just said they.
Okay. All right, John. So
they were no longer allowed to cook fresh food. It was all prepackaged.
Okay.
And steam heated.
Thanks for calling. How common is that, Walter?
I don't think it's that common. I'm kind of surprised a little bit. And it may happen. I don't say it doesn't. It's not happening, but that's what we're trying to work against. The program's changed so much and over the years. And it could be financial things. It could be a central kitchen. I'd be interested to know more about it to see what's doing that. But a good thing is that he did say he's working with the schools, and I encourage parents to get involved to see what's in schools, help your sub, whatever it might be as well. Get involved and see what's going on. Work with us.
Yeah, one thing I do want to shout out to both Jeannie and Walter. Our state is really committed to offering and providing professional development for school nutrition professionals across the state. So the Maine Department of Ed with Child Nutrition Services has a lot of opportunities for training school nutrition staff in a variety of topics. And I know in Maine, we have the Maine School Nutrition Association, and they have annual conferences. And at these conferences and these training opportunities, there are scratch cooking, trainings and whatnot. So there is a lot of continued education that occurs across the state that I think goes under the radar.
Do we have a sense of how we compare with other states as far as child school nutrition?
Really feel like Maine is ahead of the curve. When I've traveled around the country and visited other states and other, you know, at national conferences, Maine is really leading the nation in switching over to scratch cooking and farm to school, and especially for a district of small districts, there's been a lot of change here, and people look to Maine for what we're doing.
I know a handful of schools in Maine have pulled out of the federally funded program, in part because I feel like it didn't give them the flexibility they want. I read that Cape Elizabeth had a visiting chef program, but had to drop that because that was difficult with the nutrition programs. So the guidelines, this is something where different districts are really looking at the guidelines differently, isn't it, Walter?
Yeah. There's three schools, public schools, that high schools that are not in the program, Falmouth, Greeley, and Cape, and they pull out for various reasons. One of the biggest reasons that I hear is revenue. With some of the a la carte sales, they feel they can make more revenue by not being in our program. They still say they've got to feed the kids a nutritious meal, but it's only high schools that can pull out, first off, so all elementary schools must stay in. But it's kind of, it's rare to see schools pull out. Like I said, there's only three, and I've been here probably 30 years. So
we have an email from Christian. I'm a kindergarten teacher in Bucksport. First and foremost, our kitchen staff in our district are top-notch, and you can tell they put their hearts into providing healthy meals for our students. In our building, students eat in our rooms, and the teacher covers the lunch duty, so we get to see firsthand what is and is not eaten. You guys have no idea how much food is thrown away every day, especially vegetables. No matter how much we encourage students to eat their veggies, you can't force them when they don't want to. From my vantage point, probably 75% of food is being thrown out. If the primary goal is to expose students to veggies and essential nutrition, ingestion is secondary, then we're doing it. But at a cost of little to no ingestion of essential vitamins. However, if the primary goal is to get essential vitamins into our students and food exposure is secondary, then we need to try something different. Gummy vitamins are delicious, and it would stand to reason that an amazing high percentage of students will eat them. thus achieving the goal of getting essential vitamins into our students. Why don't we leave exposure of new foods up to families and have our schools focus on getting the essential vitamins into our students?
I just love to share a story. In our district, we do, at our elementary schools, we do Try It Tuesday, where we expose students to new foods, often fruits or vegetables that they may not have had exposure to. And last year we did starfruit, and one little boy came up practically crying. He was so excited. He had never tried starfruit before. He had been fascinated by it. His parents had never purchased it, probably because it's expensive, and they weren't sure he was going to like it. He loved the starfruit. And exposing students to new foods is a great thing to happen in schools, because often families don't have the funds to purchase something that they may not be sure that the families, that the students, their children are going to like quinoa. I've had families thank me for serving quinoa because they didn't know their child would like it.
But still, to her point, I mean, we have another email too here, right here, a Facebook post about somebody who went into a school and was really excited by their composting program, but still shocked by so much food being wasted. So these are real stories from people who are in the schools today.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of food waste.
Really goes back to encouraging students to take what they'll eat and eat what they take. And there's a program within this National School Lunch Program called Offer Versus Serve, where students only have to take 3 meal components. One of those meal components must be a full serving of fruit or vegetable, so a full half cup of some fruit or some vegetable. Other than that, you know, that leaves 2 other meal components. If students, you know, it's education for the students, it's education for the school nutrition staff, that they don't have to take a full tray of anything.
See, Offer for Serve is a really good program that's to help the waste. The other thing that drives some of the waste is peer pressure. What are the kids eating? What are the kids not eating? If the first kid loves it, they all will think it's great. The first kid doesn't like it, then the next few say, oh, I don't want that because, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing we're seeing is exposing new items to the students. The students try it. It takes 2 or 3 times for them, you know, to understand it, because everybody wants to eat comfortable product, comfortable fruit. And then when they go home, they talk to mom and dad, which may not know anything about the fruit, because when they go grocery shop, they get the same thing all the time. So now they get a little variety because the student wants, let's try these, mom, like the star fruit or something like that. So it's increasing the fruit and vegetables consumed, I think, not only at the schools, but also at the homes too.
All right. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation about school lunch, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical, and Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine energy audit and insulation rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, join Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Jose Antonio Vargas as he chronicles how he became one of the most recognizable undocumented people in the United States. It's an inside look at life on the fringes of society and how millions of people survive in a country where they are frequent political targets. On the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
And that Commonwealth Club program coming up after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock. Maine Public has 2 paid summer internships available for college or technical students interested in careers in the news, journalism, digital news, and or technical broadcasting fields. Candidates for these Jim Dow internships should preferably be attending an institution based in Maine or have an existing connection to the state of Maine. For more information, visit mainepublic.org, click on About, and then Careers, or call Human Resources at 207-330-4506. The application deadline is January 20th.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, school lunch programs in Maine. Joining us today, Ashley Edmondson with Let's Go, Jeannie Riley with Wyndham Schools, and Walter Beasley with Maine's Department of Education. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Let's say I'm listening to this program. Maybe I'm a chef, and I say, I can help. What can I do? What do you all advise, Walter?
You know, there's a lot of chefs out there, a lot of that maybe want to come in and just work with the school, teach them some shortcuts. If it's something that's not familiar with the kitchen crew, they don't know how to prepare it. They don't know what to do with it. So I think it's important to involve the community in the program as much as the students. It's a community program for the students.
I think that chefs can come into a school cafeteria either as a guest chef for like a one-time special themed meal or a promoted meal for a marketing value. Chefs are very surprised sometimes what's happening in a school kitchen and how intense that hour of serve when you're serving out 500 meals in 1 hour can be. They can also offer technical assistance by offering trainings or helping to develop recipes that meet the guidelines or are lower in sodium, so kicking up the seasoning profile of recipes without increasing the sodium. So those are all ways that chefs could become involved.
We have a State of Maine Department of Education offers a cook-off contest with local Maine products every year. And we did a contest last year. And every contest we do, one of the judges is a chef. And this chef was amazed at what schools were preparing for meals and the quality of the meal that was being prepared. So they walked away with a whole different idea of the school lunch program from that cook-off.
All right, so let's move on. We're going to go to Jeremy calling from Cary Plantation. Hi, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Hi, I moved to Aroostook County about 5 years ago to start a small homestead. We've raised a variety of different farm animals, but we have raised pigs several years. And I found that there was a lot of waste in our local school system with food, especially the veggies. And I tried to see if I could get some of that to use to feed to the animals, just fresh vegetables that would have normally been wasted and thrown out. And I found that I couldn't do that. So I didn't know if there's a way that Maine could change the rules to allow for farmers and homesteaders to receive some of this vegetable waste for the animals.
Actually, in the state of Maine, and I believe it's a federal law, it's called the swine food law or something like that, where schools cannot give product to a farmer for pigs unless it's going to be recooked. That's the Department of Agriculture. It was kind of a shock to us as well because we encouraged it till we found out that we couldn't do it. So it is too bad it can't be used for animals.
I wonder if that's in the new farm bill. I hear it's 800 pages.
No, it's before that, but yeah, it's buried someplace, yeah.
Okay. Avery posts on Facebook, Big Milk is already poised to take advantage of the relaxed rules, even though many students can't digest milk and its calcium claims are bogus. You know, a lot of this is somebody who writes a vegan column for the Portland Press Herald. So why don't we look at both things? How much is milk a part of the school lunch program? And then also, how many options are there for kids who are choosing vegetarian and vegan options?
Milk is required under the National School Lunch Program to be offered. That doesn't mean a student needs to take that milk. So if a student chooses not to drink the milk, that's not a problem for a student to say, oh, well, I don't drink milk. I don't drink cow's milk. They don't have to take it.
How come it's required under the program?
Because there's a lot of students who don't get enough calcium through their meals in their homes. Many families may not even have enough money to purchase milk. So if a student is eating school breakfast and school lunch, they're getting a huge portion of their daily requirement of calcium just through school meals.
And what about options for kids who, especially kids who come from, there's an increasing number of people who don't eat red meat, are vegetarians and vegans. Is that a part of the program in the Wyndham schools?
Yeah, sure. We offer, so just today, our Yummy Yogurt Cruncher lunch was a lunch with yogurt and string cheese. We also offer sun butter, peanut butter. We also offer hummus meals, like hummus and veggie meals with like pita to dip it in. There's always vegetarian offerings.
And Walter, we were talking about the importance of school lunch and addressing hunger in Maine. Unfortunately, the statistics show that 1 in 5 kids in Maine don't have enough food on a day-to-day basis. What happens come summertime when kids aren't getting school lunch?
Come summertime, we offer a summer food service program as well. And the summer food service program is really a great program, but it's way underutilized. And the summer program offers food to a breakfast or lunch, depending on the site, to a student, to a child, no sign up, no paperwork, doesn't matter what category they fall in. They walk up to a summer site, they're given a meal, and that's all there is to it. They consume the meal on site. Is summer programs in every county in the state of Maine. It's a fast-growing program, and it's just such a wonderful program and easy to do. About half the programs are run by school districts, and the other half by nonprofits, a church or YMCA or something like that.
All right, we'll go to Jim, who's calling from Saco. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I was listening to your conversation, and so my background is in health, nutrition. I work with both kids, mainly in high school, athletes or kids with different types of illnesses, and also adults, regarding like weight gain, weight loss. And I use not just as a meal replacement, but also as a sort of a superfood, or ensuring they get the multivitamins, the adequate daily requirements for all the other vegetables and fruits. And one of the things I find useful for people who have these picky tastes for like certain vegetables or prefer for sweeter things is you're able to take these things, put them in a sort of a Cuisinart, add a healthy yogurt with probiotics, or for kids who have certain allergens to say milk or nuts, you can also separate that and set aside for vegan
diet.
So it cuts down on waste, and it can also be labeled as, fun things and can be made into healthy desserts. And
all right. Thank you, Jim. Are smoothies on the menu at school lunches?
Smoothies are super popular. It's not an everyday thing, but when we serve smoothies at breakfast, it is always a participation boon.
And do you do that? Do you sneak spinach and kale into the smoothies?
Sometimes we do. On St. Patrick's Day, we often will serve a spinach smoothie for breakfast so the kids can display their green smoothie mustaches.
And I can attest to that we're in January, so I think it was in August. So the Maine School Nutrition Association does two conferences a year. And the previous one, which often many Let's Go staff attend to just continue our understanding of school nutrition, they had a smoothie smackdown. So the task, so you have all these, a room full of school nutrition professionals, that had to, had a handful of ingredients, fruits and vegetables, and they had to come up with a smoothie, and then everybody tasted.
So not only did they have to create the smoothie, but they also had to make sure that the smoothie met the guidelines, and they had to develop a marketing plan on how they were going to market that smoothie to students.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. We're going to go to Julie in Wiscasset. Hi, Julie. Go ahead.
Hi there. My background is in education, and I was a teacher for about 27 years, and I was really concerned about the quality of the food, not only in the food programs, the lunch programs, the grab-and-go breakfasts, but also in the lunches that kids were bringing to school. And it actually inspired me to become certified in integrative nutrition, so I have a real passion for healthy, whole, clean food, and I just think it's fantastic that some of these school districts are taking a harder look at cleaner, real food, less processed food, because it really is a big issue, and I saw the impact that it really did make on my students personally.
Julie, thanks for your call.
So we also see meals coming from home that aren't necessarily adequate or even complete in any sort of way, crackers or a bag of chips. That might be a student's lunch. It's really heartbreaking. And we also believe, and I've actually developed a graphic that shows you that school meals are actually more economical than a lunch packed from home if that lunch contained all the same meal components that a school lunch contains. So if it had fruits and vegetables and the milk and, a sandwich made with 2 ounces of meat, things like that, that the school lunch is actually the more economical option.
And don't be fooled. What comes from home to the school with the lunchbox doesn't mean it's eaten.
Julie, thanks for your call. We'll go to Karen, who's calling from the Portland area. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling from the Portland area. I'm an elementary school social worker here in Portland, so we work heavily with ensuring that kids have enough to eat.
Go ahead.
So I just wanted to toss out there that
the school system, most of the elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools here in Portland do have a big functioning food pantry that is always at the kids' fingertips.
So they can go in before school, after school, or even during sort of their breaks and grab something to eat?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of work it with the social worker. Being the social worker at the Presum Scott Elementary School here in Portland, I stuff backpacks probably 3 times a week.
Oh, shoot.
Get to take home.
I'm sorry, it sounds like we lost Karen and maybe lost our program for just a couple minutes, but...
I hear you.
Yeah, well, let's see. We just have a couple minutes left. Is this something, Walter, that we're seeing in more school districts, a pantry that's not breakfast, not lunch, but just a way for kids to get food?
A lot of schools have pantries or a backpack program, but it really has nothing to do with that program. The pantries aren't supposed to operate during the school day. They're designed for the take-home for the kids at home or a backpack program at home.
Okay, well, I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call before we have to go. Katie, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Sure. Following on the heels of your broadcast yesterday from the Agricultural Trade Show, I just want listeners to know that Maine Dairy Farm families have a longstanding commitment to ensuring Maine students are well-nourished. Programs such as ours and the Fuel Up to Play 60 program offer innovative new recipes to bring excitement to breakfast and lunch menus. And we also offer school nutrition equipment grants, which provide schools with items such as breakfast carts or coolers for breakfast in the classroom programs and smoothie bars, all with the goal of increasing meal participation in Maine students in schools.
Super. Katie, thank you so much for calling. That is going to be our last word today on this program about school lunch. Thank you to everybody who called in, and I'm sorry if I wasn't able to get to your question. And thank you to our guests in the studio today, Jeannie Riley, Director of Nutrition for RSU 14 in Windham, Walter Beasley, Child Nutrition Director for the Maine Department of Education, and Ashley Edmondson, Program Coordinator for Let's Go at Maine Health. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of the show as well as all sorts of resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.